We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What a game. So many ups and downs, and we were one rebound away. And then they got a chance at the end, and DeRozan hit a shot, and then, you know, then we're in overtime. So disappointing. You know, it's a gut punch. Unfortunately, this is all part of meaningful games. You know, when you make minor mistakes at the wrong times, you know, it can really bite you. And there were a lot of them, and it, you know, myself included. So, once again, we gotta learn from it, and get ready for Saturday.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead. And baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits the three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake, shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
It down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go! Go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping there. Team, we gon' need a mop.
Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Pacer Nation, what is going on? Welcome back to your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. I'm your host, Alex Golden. I'm joined today by Michael J. Fauci, and the Pacers fall 132-129 in their first overtime game of the season. They fall once again to a team on the second night of a back-to-back. Did everything they could to try to get back in this one, but they just had too many blunders down the stretch. Fauci, this was a tough loss.
This one hurts. This one hurts a lot because there was a lot of great moments in this game when the Pacers were, you know, on the comeback that could have made this pod a completely different pod. Now the Pacers, I believe they fell to 2-10 on the second night of a back-to-back. Just this was that letdown that we feared, because right when the Pacers are coming off of those highs of a massive win, it feels that they can never just follow it up. And this was a battle tonight, and it really hurts that the Pacers are coming up on the side with an L on it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Chicago has somehow just had the Pacers number this year.
Yeah.
It feels like DeMar DeRozan has always been a Pacer killer since he's been in the league. Does a really good job of drawing fouls, and he was on fire tonight. And I felt like Indiana just did a really poor job down the stretch, not only in regulation, but also in overtime. And I think we just got to start there because the Pacers, you know, they're up by one, and Andrew Nembhard takes a very ill-advised three-point shot with about 7 seconds left on the shot clock. The Bulls get the rebound. They throw it out to Coby White. Pascal Siakam has the block of the season, probably saves the game. Nembhard gets the rebound. Nesmith gets fouled. He makes both free throws, but Nesmith is guarding DeRozan in this moment, and the Bulls called a timeout, and the Pacers decided, hey, you know what? Let's foul to make sure they can't get a three-point shot. Okay, first of all, why don't you just play solid defense, and if they make a three, you go to overtime and deal with it then. But instead, Nesmith is a guy that ends up fouling DeRozan with five fouls. So now Nesmith just intentionally fouls out of the game. DeRozan goes to the line. He hits the first one, intentionally misses the second one. And then Obi Toppin decides, oh, I can jump up and grab this, but instead I'm just going to tip it out of bounds. So he tips it out of bounds. Now the Bulls have the ball with 2 seconds left in the game. Everybody knows who this ball is going to. The guy that has been hot the entire game, DeMar DeRozan. And Rick Carlisle's like, hey, TJ McConnell, come sub into the game. Nesmith just fouled out. All right, so McConnell's in the game, and he's guarding Dosunmu, and Siakam's guarding DeRozan. And Tyler Smith at Tyler Smith ISL had a great angle of this from the press box where he was videoing it from the side. And all they did was a basic pick. And the Pacers decided, Siakam and McConnell decided, hey, let's switch this thing. So here we go. McConnell, the 6 foot white guy, going up against a 6 foot eight guard that's just absolutely on fire. He catches the ball. He shoots over TJ McConnell like he's not even there. Switches it. Game goes to overtime. The Pacers had a chance to get a head with 0.3 seconds left. Good play design by Halliburton and Carlisle, but they couldn't convert, and they go to overtime. No Nesmith now, and I guess we can just start there, Fauci. A lot to unpack at the end of regulation.
A lot to unpack there, and that whole sequence, I mean, it was a disaster. It truly was. It was a meltdown by the Pacers that had done such a great job clawing back and taking that lead, and you know, just a few different things. I mean, you already went through so much. I don't even know where to start because it's bad because the Pacers could have made many different – one key play here or there makes a big difference. I don't think they ever even thought ahead to, yeah, you know, what if Nesmith fouls out? You don't have him anymore at that point. Like, why is McConnell in there? Obi, if he does grab that rebound, it's a completely different story. Obviously, the ball is going to DeRozan. When you're talking about why they fouled in the first place, this is a Chicago team that shot 10 of 28 from three. In this game, you're scared that they're going to hit a three. Who's going to hit the three? I felt like it was just, I hate that decision to foul right over there because clearly Chicago knew exactly what they were going to do. They were going to miss that free throw. The Pacers were not ready for that. It was devastating to watch, but I do want to just talk about a little bit back before, but just like Turner hit some massive threes. And then Siakam with that huge block. I feel like all of this gets brushed under the rug of just the Pacers made those plays on the offensive side of things. That block was huge by Siakam, but it was countless defensive plays that the Pacers were not able to make those timely stops in this game. And I felt every time that they were down four and they scored a basket to cut it to two, there came Chicago again with another basket. And they were just never able to push ahead, leading to that final play with Halliburton. Going for a three. I think he anticipates Caruso's going to foul him. Alex Caruso's an all-NBA defender for a reason. He manages to not make that contact with Halliburton, and obviously that shot falls shy. Just a brutal loss for the Pacers over here, a series of emotions. I'm still frustrated. I really don't want to go off right now, but it's just like I'm so frustrated with just how this game unfolded.
I mean, I just feel like, once again, the Pacers with their late game execution, it's not been great this year. They've had moments, but it's not been great when it's been close like this. And one thing that was really frustrating to me was the Pacers did challenge originally called foul on Nesmith where DeRozan did hook him. And they won the challenge, but after that, they decided, let's go small. Let's take Turner out and put Obi Toppin in with 3 minutes and 15 seconds left. So now you've got Obi Toppin in the game for Miles Turner, and he probably had one of the most costly turnovers in the game with 2:17 left. Just a horrific bad pass where Coby White steals it, gets a two-point shot, and then, you know, he gets blocked by Ayo Dosunmu on the very next play. And, I think it was a jump ball. And this is where Obi Toppin then has to win the jump ball. Andrew Nembhard gets it. And then as Halliburton's at the free throw line with a minute 50 left, they put Turner back into the game. And that's when Turner came in and knocked two threes back-to-back, like you said, to give the Pacers massive a three-point threes. Lead. That's, to me, it's like, why was Turner not in the game to close it there? Why were you going with Obi Toppin? I'm sorry, but Obi Toppin was not good in this game tonight. Has been good the last couple of games, but he was struggling. Why not just ride it out with your centers? I understand that DeRozan was cooking, but you cannot play drop coverage with Miles Turner, whoever he's defending, it was Vucevic, whoever. If there's a screen set for DeRozan, you cannot play drop coverage and allow him to get an open look. Like, I didn't understand a lot of the coverage on DeMar DeRozan tonight either, because it's like, when this guy is on fire like this, you have to get the ball out of his hands. And, I'll live with Torrey Craig hitting a three in the corner versus DeMar DeRozan getting open. That you live with those kind of shots. But the Pacers in the third quarter, like, let's just be honest here, they came out with a four-point lead and were down by eight at the end of the third quarter. So they gave up 12 points to Chicago. And I feel like, that's where – I'm sure Rick Carlisle is saying this to the post-game press conference. Like, we lost a game in the third quarter. Well, you did, but you didn't. You know what I mean? So it's like that quarter was so flat for the starters. And I don't know how many times Alex Caruso was left open in that quarter for wide-open threes. So, there's a lot of things we can talk about here, but I just felt like some of the late game execution, that stuff in the third quarter, just like some really frustrating stuff. After you just saw this team locked in against Oklahoma City, it's really frustrating how they cannot be consistent with their locked in defense.
No, they can't. And you want to talk about just timely stops, locked in defense, whatever it is. The Pacers allowed the Bulls to hit essentially a buzzer beating shot in the second, third, and fourth quarter of this game, where there was an Alex Caruso three with about a second and a half left right before halftime. I didn't even know who this guy was. Owner Lop, bite him, bit him. I don't even know that guy.
The rookie, yeah.
The rookie, he had a big shot to end the third quarter, which I was like, what? Come on. Like, just after the Pacers had gotten a bucket, they give up a bucket. And then obviously DeRozan to end, regulation with the game-tying shot. So it's just like every time the quarter was winding down, whatever it was, Indiana just took their foot off the gas or off the clamps defensively and let up a big basket. When you lose this game by three, and obviously, hey, it took a DeRozan, made free throw, missed free throw, rebound, a shot, to be able to send it to overtime. Those were massive plays. Really frustrating. But another thing that we haven't talked about yet is, once again, this happened against Minnesota, and it happened now. When the Pacers have an opportunity for a tying shot or a win, Carlisle has once again elected not to call timeout. This time the Pacers would have had about 10 seconds to go. This time around, Alex, do you think it was the right decision? Is it easier to just say it wasn't because we missed, or what do you think?
It was a terrible decision. I think
it was awful.
There is enough really proof in the pudding now to say the Pacers are not better off.
They're not that kind of team.
And you got to give Carlisle a lot of credit, because there was a play that they ran after a timeout where Aaron Neesmith had a wide open three in the corner. Now, he missed it, but he was wide open. I think that's a lot better than, the very inconsistent Tyrese Halliburton from distance. And this team was not shooting the ball well from three tonight besides Turner. So, you've got Halliburton out there who double clutches. And to me, he should have just went straight up, because he probably would have got more of a foul if he wouldn't have double clutched on that 3-point shot. But it was a terrible shot. Like, I'm not trying to be mean, but like the way he kind of forced it, like it wasn't like a great look, and they were scrambling to get him a look at the end. And I don't care what you say. Oh, well, they can set their defense. Oh, you know what? I'm tired of hearing that, because you can set your offense up too. And so to me, it's like, I've understood against Minnesota because they're one of the top, like, I think they were the best defensive team in the league at that point. I get that. They did the same thing against Charlotte, right? And maybe even the same thing against Toronto when Buddy Hield took that shot. So it's just like, it's been a reoccurring theme where they do not take a timeout at the end of games, and it's not worked out in their favor. So when is enough enough? And that's kind of where I'm at with this whole thing. It's like, I understand trusting Tyrese Halliburton because he's the point god, but he's not been playing like the point god recently. No. So he's been playing like a solid starter, right? But at this point, Nimhard's bringing the ball up and they're looking to try to get a shot, and they're giving it to Turner. And like at that point, like if there's like 6 seconds left and your offense doesn't have a good look, then that's when you call a timeout.
I know.
So I feel like, you know, they had the timeouts to call, get the play set up. Look what Chicago did. They got their play set up and bada bing, bada boom, Pacers couldn't stop it. Because good offense always beats good defense, right? It's one of those things where better offense will beat better defense. And so to me, you get a better look set up, you get maybe more shooters out there instead. But all I know is you have a hot Miles Turner, you run a play to get him open instead of trying to force something there with Tyrese at the end, even though Tyrese is the guy. I just don't understand it. I've been very like passive with how I feel about it recently, but in this game tonight, it was very frustrating.
No, it was, and I understand that they wanted it. You're looking for Turner because of how hot he was from three. But Turner's far more better when he's set instead of just trying to, you know, shake someone off the dribble and put up a three. And I just felt like he had no look at it. I didn't like the Halliburton look at all. And just to your point, like, you could still call timeout. It doesn't mean that you're too far in at that point. Like, give your team a chance to be set. Draw something up. It's frustrating because now I do want to see what the Pacers' record is in those situations where they elect to not call timeout and they're pushing it forward, because I can't really remember a time where it's worked out. I'm sure there has been, but it just feels like lately that has not been the case. I felt like tonight, I mean, you talk about Halliburton from three. I mean, he was 1 of 6 tonight. He was 2 of 6 against OKC. He was 1 of 6 against Orlando. 2 of 7 against Minnesota, 3 of 10 against Dallas, 0 of 6 against San Antonio and New Orleans. I mean, it goes on and on. The struggles from three-point land for Halliburton are extremely real right now, and that was just not the move tonight.
No, it wasn't. And you know what else wasn't the move, Vachi? Abandoning giving the ball to Pascal Siakam. I couldn't do not understand how this team goes about getting him the basketball, because it's like, he's playing with the bench unit and things are going really well. And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, we're going to bring Obi Toppin back in for Pascal Siakam. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why are we doing this? Like they're clicking right now. Ride the hot hand. I'd rather Siakam be a little bit more tired towards the end of the fourth and build off this lead than bring Obi back in when Obi wasn't playing a great game. And, you know, we've been giving Obi a lot of flowers for his play of late. So I'm not going to be afraid to criticize him here in this moment because, you know, he is the backup power forward. I mean, So that's the thing, and he's done a good job all season long he has. But Pascal, he doesn't touch the ball for like 10 to 12 minutes at a time. And you look at his numbers, he's 8 of 12 in this game. Guess who also took 12 shots? Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith, Miles Turner, Tyrese Halliburton. Oh yeah, and DJ McConnell had 11 shots. So yeah, nice balance. But you know what? Who had 24 shots for their team and had 46 points? DeMar DeRozan. He also had 17 free throws. If the guy has a disadvantage, give him the basketball. Because I felt like there was nobody really that could stop him on Chicago based on their size and how they're built. He could have easily taken those guys in the paint and created more, especially when you're not shooting the ball well from three, Faja, because this Pacers team really was terrible from three. I know they ended up finishing 31.1% from three, but like a lot of those were from Turner late in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
So they were so bad from three. And if you can let Siakam kind of cook in the paint, because I mentioned this when we got Siakam, there was a podcast I was listening to and they called him the DeMar DeRozan of power forwards. Like, let him cook in the mid-range, because we just saw him do it against Oklahoma City. Like, he clearly can do it against smaller guys like Dosunmu or whoever they want. Even DeRozan. DeRozan can't guard Siakam in the paint. And that puts more pressure on him, makes him defend more. So I just felt like a lot of different things went wrong. But that was one big area of concern for me, was just the lack of touches for Pascal Siakam, who I think right now is the best scorer on the team.
I felt like when Siakam really had the ball in his hands, or the baskets he was getting, he was making tough shots. He was working for, he was crashing the glass. He had 3 offensive rebounds. I felt like that was leading to points. But he had a stretch early on where he had like 7 points and 7 boards, maybe about midway in the second quarter. And then it was just, you know, he only finished with about 2 more rebounds for the rest of the game. Not enough shots. I mean, he had, you know, I think it was like maybe 3 shots in the third quarter alone. That was a rough third quarter for the Pacers. I felt like they should have kept going to Siakam. That was frustrating to see. But for like, you know, the rest of the group, I mean, I felt like Nesmith and Nembhard had their struggles tonight. The bench, when you needed it to be, strong. It was tough. It was great to see Jairus Walker get 23 minutes. That was nice. And at halftime, he did have 7 points. So finished the game with 10, but I felt like overall it was a good Jairus Walker performance. Jalen Smith had his moments. So did McConnell, but I just felt like this was one of those nights where it's like Ben Shepherd didn't have it. Obi didn't have it. It was tough to really know. Like, the Pacers were balanced. They were, but you didn't have that DeRozan who can go out there and get you a basket when you needed it. And to say balanced is like, I saw this stat. This was awesome. Pacers now set a record. This is the 22nd game that they've had at least 7 players score in double figures. It's great to see, but sometimes you need that alpha to go out there and put up 40. And the Pacers have not had that. They have not. And I think Turner got hot during a stretch, but Turner's hotness came in like a shorter dose, where I feel like DeRozan, it just felt like all game was killing the Pacers. I mean, 17 free throw attempts. The Pacers didn't have anyone shooting more than 6 free throws in this game.
A lot of things that went wrong in this game. I mean, just to me, it's just like the bench brought this team back into it. The starters had an 11-point lead going into like the final 2 minutes of the second quarter. They allowed Chicago to close it and get it to within 4. And when that happened, I was like, okay, this is going to be an interesting game. And I thought Indiana, you know, Chris Cenari kept saying it, this has been their strongest quarter. They're a third quarter team, blah, 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 blah.
Not tonight.
They were awful in the third quarter. And I'm not dissing on Denari for saying that. Like, that is a true stat. That's what this team has been. But in this game, it's just like, to me, it's like Tyrese Haliburton wants to be the guy. But I have not felt that from him for the past couple of weeks. Since he's returned from injury. Like, even when he was playing on a minutes restriction, you felt like, okay, he's the guy. Like, the way he played against Boston and New York in those games when he couldn't finish them out, you're thinking, man, if he could have finished these out, we would have won these games. But as of late, it's just like, even in the wins that we've had, he's not been spectacular. He's been okay. He's been good.
Yeah.
But he's just not to that level you need him to be at. So it's kind of weird because I understand how this team is currently built, and you know, they could have easily won this game. And I think that's what makes this so frustrating. It's like Chicago, everyone's going to say, oh, it's a bad loss. Chicago's a bad team. Chicago's not a bad team. They've been playing better basketball of late. And that's how I felt last time when we talked about this. Like, you know, this is going to be a disappointing loss if they lose. It's only disappointing because of the way they lost it. I'm not disappointed that they lost to Chicago because I know Chicago has beaten some really good teams throughout the season. Like, they're not a slouch. You know, they're 32-34. They're in the play-in. Like, this is a team the Pacers do not want to see in the play-in because they have really struggled with Chicago and what they bring, and they really have no answer for DeMar DeRozan. So I just feel like Haliburton has to continue growing into the player he needs to be, because tough games like this, you need him to step up and be the guy, but he couldn't do it tonight. And he needs to find a way to step up. And if he can't do it, then let Siakam do it a little bit more. And you can't rely on Turner to bail you out every night, because that's just not going to happen.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
No, it's not. And this is actually, since Halliburton's came back from his injury, he's only scored more than 20 points twice. This is a guy that was averaging 24 points per game at one point during the season. So it's been tough. The Pacers just, they're not a great team when Halliburton's giving you, you know, closer to 15 points per game. It's just, it's tough. Tonight, he had 17 points. This is a game that went to overtime. That's not a good sign. But just 13 shots. I would like to see what the Pacers' record is in games where he has 13 or less shots, because it just feels that this team has not been great enough to be able to carry him at times. And I felt like tonight it looked like hey, you know what? This might be a time that we could get a win where Halliburton isn't, you know, at his best. I mean, 14 assists, it's fantastic. It was great to see. But I just felt like, yeah, we're not seeing that, like, Tyrese takeover at times. There's been a couple big shots, like against OKC, you know, there was. But I felt like Siakam was a guy that had it tonight but just didn't get the rock enough, like we talked about. And then there was a little bit of inconsistent play, you know, from the rest of the group that made things tough. And I felt like this is one of those where I know you're saying, hey, it's Chicago, but it's Chicago without Zach LaVine and Patrick Williams. That's tough. That's tough. Yeah. I mean, those are two good players for them. So it's like, it's not like they're at full strength. So we can't make excuses to say, well, we didn't have Mathurin. They're without Zach LaVine. So I felt that this is one that we let slip away. You know, maybe this is Chicago being a little bit more fresh down the stretch. The Pacers were a little bit more tired. And this is what happens when you're on a back-to-back and you're playing in overtime. But if I felt like Denari threw out the stat, it was great to see. Over the last four games, the Pacers had the seventh best defensive rating in the NBA against four playoff teams. But just seeing them give up 132 to Chicago, and I know it went to overtime, so those numbers are inflated a bit. But it's just disappointing to see, because they had been locked in on defense lately. But a night like tonight, it's just it's tough. I mean, Chicago shoots 32 free throws in this game, with DeRozan shooting 17. That's a massive difference maker in this game. You let one slip away that you could have had, you should have had, and we have every right to feel disappointed.
Yeah, DeRozan is a great foul baiter. I mean, it's annoying to watch, I won't lie, because I'm glad that they...
It's vintage Harden, it really was.
I'm glad they challenged that one that got overturned when he hooked Neesmith, but
that was justice.
I believe it was an overtime when they called the one on Shepherd. DeRozan initiated all that contact too. Like, he lifted his arm up into Shepherd's arms with his off arm, and they gave him the and one. I'm just thinking to myself, like, he is a professional foul getter. You know, he's a foul baiter, and I respect him for understanding what works well for him. But, like, as someone watching it, rooting for the other team, that is very annoying. And it's very frustrating to see an inconsistent whistle be blown the whole time. So, I mean, there are some positives in this game despite the loss. I mean, I do understand that it's tough to look at. But, like, Turner had a really solid game, 27 points, 7 rebounds. How many blocks did he end up with tonight? Just one. So, not too much closer. But I thought Jairus Walker really showed some big-time minutes here.
Yeah.
In this game, 24 minutes from him tonight was the most.
Played down the stretch too.
Yeah, he played the most of anybody off the bench in this game. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting that he played that many minutes. But 24 minutes from him, 3 of 5 shooting. Like, that one three that he took in the second half, I think it was the fourth quarter actually, that was a big time three.
Yeah,
because, you know, Chicago and Indiana kept trading the lead back and forth. You know, I felt like Ben Shepherd really struggled tonight from outside. 0 of 5 from three. And, you know, he's becoming a guy that, you know, as a rookie, they go through their ups and downs. And I feel like he's kind of going through a little bit of a skid here recently, where he's not particularly shooting the ball as well as he was. Like, against Dallas, he hits everything, but against everybody else, he's just kind of a below average 3-point shooter. So I'm just looking at it from that perspective. But, you know, McConnell had a good lift in that second quarter, really got the Pacers going after they struggled early on and gave the Pacers that lead in the second quarter. But yeah, you need more. And I think this is what's frustrating, is you need more from Tyrese Halliburton, because he has to take his game to another level for this team to be at their best. And I feel like at times it's on him to get Siakam more involved in the offense.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. That's the pressures that comes with being a franchise player. You get the credit when things go well. Unfortunately, when things don't, you got to take some of the blame. And look, you know, Halliburton's going to have many magical moments, but I just feel that, you know, lately it's been tough. The Halliburton at the beginning of the season, that man was a magician. And I just feel like now we haven't seen those takeovers that we talked about before. But going back to Jarris real quick, I felt like this was the most minutes that he played in a meaningful game. He's played other, you know, there's been more minutes that he's played, but those were in blowouts. Jarris Walker was someone that tonight, you know, we came in saying, okay, he's played, what, 3-4 minutes? Then it was 7 minutes. Okay, hey, could he get to, you know, 10 to 15? Seeing him play 24 minutes was not what I expected, but I think it was a sign of, you know, confidence from Carlisle in Jarris Walker, and I think that that's something they really monitor moving forward. As it relates to TJ McConnell, I felt like when McConnell got whistled for that technical foul, yeah, it really kind of lit a fire in him, and he became out there pretty aggressive. But yeah, this is one of those where you're not going to, you know, pinpoint it back to that, but that technical foul ended up being, you know, something that you got to avoid, you know, that jarring with the ref in a game that ends up being so close. You could have never known that that could have, you know, came back to bit the Pacers by any means. But McConnell, 16 points. He hit a three in this game, 5-11 shooting, does it in 20 minutes. Tweeted it out, but it's people forget right now, TJ McConnell is averaging a career high 9 points per game. A career high for a guy that was told he wouldn't be in the rotation. I feel that where would this bench be without McConnell this year? So it's good to see. And, you know, Jalen Smith had his moments, 15 points, 6 boards in just 18 minutes. But, you know, this is one of those where I don't know if maybe it's, hey, you know, if you could have had Mathurin, you know, out there getting a couple more baskets here or there would have been great. But I think this is a night where the Pacers just needed more timely stops. That Siakam block was extremely timely. But unfortunately, when it mattered most, the Pacers could not get the more meaningful stops down the stretch. And that's what really hurts me.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really ready for the Mathurin conversation yet, because there are so many different ways you can look at it if Mathurin's playing right now and just how it changes a lot of different things. But yeah, I mean, Rick Carlisle said it in the post-game press conference, like one rebound away from winning this game. It's a gut punch.
That's what it is. That's how close the game was.
You know, it's easy to point fingers at a lot of things that went wrong and say, well, if they could have done this, they could have done that, they win this game. But it was right there. Like, you know, they do make the foul up three. DeRozan goes 1 of 2. If they get the rebound, they win the game. So is the foul like the worst thing ever? I can understand the case for why you foul up three. I can understand the case for it. But sometimes I just feel like, hey, why don't you just see how it plays out by just playing solid defense? You know,
I know
I am a little bit torn on that, because I felt like I was pretty strong early on about how annoyed I was by the fact that they did it. I think I was more annoyed because it was Nesmith that committed the foul,
which is a valid point though.
To foul him out of the game.
Anybody but Nesmith, you know?
Yeah, it's like, this is where Tyrese needs to come over and foul, knowing he doesn't have that many fouls in the game, because you know he doesn't play a lot of defense. But you know, Carlisle was praising Halliburton's defense early on before the game started tonight in the pregame press conference, where he meets with the media about, you know, an hour and a half before the game. And I told you last night, like, I thought that was one of the best Halliburton defensive performances we saw against OKC. Mm-hmm. And he was getting more physical. But in this game, like, he just kind of got lost in La La Land a lot, leaving Alex Caruso open so many times. Like, Caruso finished with 23 points, Fauci. Like, I can't remember how many threes he ended up having. I put my phone up, but
5 of 6 from three.
Yeah, that's you cannot have that happen. And I felt like 4 of those came in the third quarter. So
Killed us in the third.
Huh?
He killed us in the third. He didn't even score a point in the fourth quarter. So I mean that third quarter was everything for Alex Caruso, and it was just extremely frustrating to watch. He was actually, outside of Caruso, Torrey Craig is the only guy on Chicago that had more than 1 3-pointer made. So who are we scared of? I mean, were they going to draw up the play for Caruso at that point? Like, why wouldn't you try and just play some good defense? Because you know DeMar DeRozan, he could do a lot of things. He ain't beating you from three-point land. I'll tell you that. That man was one of six from three. And
the one he hit was a dagger.
Yeah, it's just
right after Turner hit the three to give us a one-point lead in overtime. But you're right. Or here's an idea. There's not much time left. Maybe you double team him. Get the ball out of his hands, make Vooch beat you or something like that.
Who was 0-4 from three? I mean, it's just like, yeah. I mean, let anybody but DeMar DeRozan, you know, have that ball in his hand. And I just felt like you could have lived with anybody else taking that shot. Like we talked about, Torrey Craig made a big three. Okay, you can live with that. But other than that, I just feel like it's just like, just lock in, play some defense. And, yeah, that was just once that happened, I mean – It just took the wind out of my sails. It really did. Once DeRozan led that comeback and overtime, I was just like, Chicago's got this momentum right now. They really do. And when you make plays like that, all your teammates just believe. And I felt like Indiana kind of, I don't know, they had that look. They had that look like they knew they blew it. And I felt like overtime was just, the Pacers were always trailing.
Especially without Nesmith, like not having someone to really put on DeRozan, like you got to put Siakam on him with five fouls. And, you know, there was a couple of fouls there early in the third quarter where Siakam got called back-to-back for fouls. And it really, you know, kind of put him in a spot that was tough for the Pacers to play him a little bit more extended minutes because he had a mismatch and he was begging for the ball. He finally gets it, but he had to kind of push off to get the space because it was a bad pass. So, yeah, I mean, this was just a tough game. Definitely a tough loss. You know, hopefully the Pacers got the next 2 days off. They'll play Brooklyn, who has not played great basketball this year on Saturday. Then they got Cleveland on Monday before they go out for a five-game road trip where they'll see Chicago at the end of that, which is not going to be an easy game, the last game of a road trip after being out west. So they've got their hands full, but I just feel like this is what's so frustrating about this team is because you get up for those games against OKC and you feel really good about this team. And you think, man, if they can win this one against Chicago, really prove that this is they're heading in the right direction, then they lose by three in overtime. Like, I don't feel as bad about where they're heading based on the effort they played with tonight. But it's also just very frustrating as not only someone that covers this team, but just as a fan of this team that wants to see them do well, unable to pull out a game like this when it was clearly in their hands and they just let it slip away. It was like a wide receiver having a wide open catch in the end zone, hits him right in the hands and he drops it. That's exactly what this game felt like.
Yeah, this was just tough because it's like Groundhog Day. It's just that every time the Pacers get to this point, there's that inevitable letdown that you're like, this time's going to be different. It is going to be different. And yes, they did play hard tonight. They did. Like, they clawed back. And I'm telling you right now, I don't care that it's Chicago. If the Pacers won this game, it would have meant something. Mm-hmm. If you saw that, the shots that Turner was hitting were incredible. That block by Siakam, what's underrated is Andrew Nembhard slows down Coby White. And that's kind of forgot about. Siakam has an unbelievable block. Andrew Nembhard has an unbelievable save on that play to be able to throw that down to Nesmith. I feel like I'm like a clown right now. I texted you. I said, wow, man, wow, yeah. Right after that. And then we lost. And it's just like, I couldn't text back. I felt like we had it in the bag. And it's just like, for everything to slip away, I was stunned. I sat there. And it's like, yes, I was watching the game by myself, but I felt like I was silent. Like, I couldn't move. I was just like, you gotta be kidding me. And this is just one of those losses that just stings a little bit more because you try to tell yourself something's gonna be different. It was almost different, but in the end, it was the same, that same letdown.
DeMar DeRozan is a guy that sent this Pacers franchise into a complete and total rebuild.
And I never forgot that.
So when you texted me and said, wow, man, wow, I said, there's too much time left in this game, and DeMar DeRozan's on the other side for me to even respond to this. I said, I'm not getting my hopes up. I'm not getting excited. I'm not making any graphics before we do the pod about the Pacers beating the Bulls. I said, I'm not doing it. I'm just leaving it alone. I'm not going to jinx this because I don't want this to fall back on me. for getting to a getting my foot ahead of or getting myself ahead of. How am I saying this? I can't talk right now. I'm getting tired, but I don't want to get ahead of myself is what I'm trying to say. So I was frustrated with this loss more than anything. And as I'm sitting here watching it in overtime, and it's just like DeRozan again and again and again. And I'm just like, okay, I don't even have to say anymore. Like I literally thought about this when I was listening to it on the radio on the way home from where I was at tonight. I was like, when is DeRozan going to retire? Like, I cannot wait. Like, I will throw a ceremony for the day he retires, because players like him are just so, so good at constantly attacking over and over and over again. And that is why he is someone that I've brought up before. Like, hey, if he's available, like, should the Pacers consider getting him for, like, a late bucket, that kind of guy, like, just kind of carry this team? And the way that Chicago, I think Chicago's better off without Zach LaVine and with DeMar DeRozan kind of being the focal point. I really do, just because of how good he is.
Yeah, I just feel like Zach LaVine has not been a winner in this league. And I know that you could say, well, what does DeRozan want? DeRozan was so cool. LeBron was always just in DeRozan's way when DeRozan was with Toronto. And I just felt like there were a lot of good Raptors teams that had even been, I think they're the one seed at one point, or, you know, close to it. And I just feel like, hey, you know, that's a guy that you felt for when Toronto won that championship without him, because he was such a big part of what they had been building. But yeah, DeRozan, he's like a throwback player. His mid-range game is just it's something you got to admire. That man can get buckets. He's always played hard. It feels like the only thing he's missing now is really like a run to the NBA Finals or like a championship or something. So I look forward to him being in a change of scenery next year, as I do believe that him and Chicago will be kind of parting ways. I don't think he'll want to re-sign there, given the direction that the team's going in. I think that it's only a matter of time before he's moving on, and I'm looking forward to that. Send him to the Western Conference. Yeah, you know, hey, Lakers. I'm cool with that. But yeah, this is one of those losses that you want to be able to move on quickly from. And I know you mentioned the Pacers have 2 days off, so it won't be too quickly, but I think that they also need a little bit of a reset. And I think that Brooklyn is that team to be able to reset against.
Can't have any more resets, Fodge. It's, you know, I'm tired of hearing like, oh, they got to have a reset. You know, I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying.
Once a week, it feels like, you know.
They have to. It's just like, no, you gotta just dust it off and get back and play better basketball. So, you know, there was a lot of good, like I said, there was a lot of good things that came from this game tonight. I did like the fight. I liked how they, even though they had their backs against the wall, trailing by 8 going into the fourth, like they had a chance to win this game, and they should have won this game. So regardless, it's a loss. You can't do anything about it. We talked about it. We pointed out what was bad and what was, you know, some issues we had. And I think we were fair. We were critical, but we were fair. And if we missed something, I'm sure we did at some point. There's things that happen a lot throughout the game. So if we missed something, let us know in the comment section below on the YouTube video, on anything on social media. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please like this video if you enjoyed our conversation about this game, regardless of the win or the loss. But any final words before we sign off?
No, I would just say, hey, on YouTube, yeah, drop a comment as well. I mean, I know we don't always want it to work out that way, but it feels like these tough losses tend to kind of fuel a lot of conversation. And I think that some of the comments that we see in there are always valid points. Always love to hear from you guys. So, hey, feel free to drop a like, drop a comment, but we're in it together. There's going to be the highs, and we just experienced that beating OKC. I mean, it was awesome. Mm-hmm. Losing to Chicago, it was the worst, but we're going to be in it to celebrate those great times together. And there will be more of them. I think the Pacers got roughly about 15 to 16 games left in this regular season. It's going to be a roller coaster of emotions. The standings are always changing. So, you know, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. Let's not get too down on ourselves. Pacers have an opportunity to bounce back against Brooklyn.
I love the dramatic comment from you there, Fauci. Was, you know, against OKC was the best. Against this, the Bulls was the worst.
Yep. Hey, life comes at you pretty quickly in a 24-hour span.
Yeah, it's not even 24 hours, which is the sad part. We don't even get a full day to celebrate the Pacers OKC win. But you know what? You got to bounce back. You just got to keep moving. And thankfully, Miami lost to Denver tonight. I don't think Indiana's going to be catching Orlando anytime soon. They've got such a cupcake of a schedule. They've got the Hornets coming up. I forget there's some – they've got like five more easy games in a row before they even have another tough game. So I'm not expecting Orlando really to, you know, fall too far out of the standings. But, you know, Philly's not been playing great basketball of late, and Joel Embiid, there was reports that he's not, looking close to coming back. So if you can just kind of float and tread water a little bit here as you're getting ready for – the stretch here and this road trip coming up, you know, in the next couple of days, you just got to win these games at home. You got to take care of business against Brooklyn and against Cleveland. I know Cleveland's been playing great, but you got to take care of them on Monday. That'd be a big win that you can get up for, and then secure the season series against Cleveland as well, a team you've already beat twice. So that would be huge too. But Facci, I'm ready to put this one behind us. I feel like we talked about it enough, and I think it's time to move on and let the people know where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPodSTP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPodSTP. You can find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok at Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, go to youtube.com/Setting the Pace, Pacers Podcast. We can find all of our post-game video content there. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to wherever you get your podcast, because we want to hear from you. Like we said earlier, leave us a like, comment in the YouTube comment section. But if you haven't already, I know I push for this at the end of every episode, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. I know there's been people that have reached out and said they would like to, but I have not seen a lot go up on Apple recently, so that would really be beneficial if you haven't done it yet to go ahead and do that now. But Facci, if you're hoping the Pacers can put this loss behind them and use it as motivation to beat the bricks off the Brooklyn Nets, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers!